This season of the WNBA has gone to new heights.
And that means the playoffs are going to be hotter than ever.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson.
And all WNBA season long, we've brought you analysis and interviews with some of your favorite court queens.
So for the finals, you know we're bringing takes you can only find in this courtroom.
Listen to and follow Queens of the Court, a WNBA podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, speaking of nice guys who we want good things for, here comes Mark Schlereth on the River Islands guest line. We're joined by Odyssey NFL insider Mark Schlereth, host of the Stinkin' Truth podcast. Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. Mayo game day. Be delicious. Hey, Stink, what's going on?
Nothing, man. How you guys doing?
We're doing fantastic. We're still, just to give you the dynamics of our week, there was major San Francisco Giants news at the beginning of the week, so we haven't even really gone that deep into sort of figuring out what happened with the Niners last week. Would love your perspective on this. Did the Niners get right last week, or were they just playing the Patriots?
Well, I think probably a little bit of both. I mean, I thought Brock Purdy was tremendous. And for all those people who say, well, Brock Purdy's just a quarterback of the system and he just, it's just all the guys around him and this, that, and the other. Listen, man, the guy is a really outstanding quarterback and he's a big-time quarterback. And obviously, one thing about the Patriots, I know they're not the most talented team, but they're a big physical football team, man, and really physical on both sides of the ball. So, it's not like it's an easy matchup. It's not like anytime you play the Patriots, you're not going to be tested physically. They'll run the ball. They'll defend it. Like they're pretty good that way. Obviously the quarterback situation and some of the periphery players, I've refused to call anybody who handles the ball. I call them ball handlers. I don't call them skill position players. That irritates me. So the ball handlers, not maybe as talented as some, but it's still an NFL football team, and they still have the potential to beat you. So I like what the 49ers did, and I love what Brock Purdy did.
What about Jordan Mason? When you watch him run the football, and now we're getting a little bit of a bigger sample on exactly what he is and who he is against the Jets and all the way through against New England, a pretty good run defense this past weekend. What are you seeing from Mason when you watch him run the ball?
I see a guy that understands that scheme, understands what's expected of him. And the thing I love about him, one, he's physical, right? He's gonna finish the run going forward. You block it for two, he'll get you four or five. And that's one of my favorite things about backs, that like the really good backs just find a way to always be falling forward. But I think the big thing for me is he has a great sense of like pressing the hole and then finding the soft lanes, finding the softest spot and hitting that thing hard, coming downhill on that thing. And a lot of guys, especially young backs, have this tendency to want to bust everything out or, make every rushing attempt a buffet. And sometimes you just need to have an hors d'oeuvre. Like sometimes you just need to get yourself 3 or 4 yards and make it nasty and make it physical. And that's what he does. But I always find it funny when, doing this national breakfast ball show and guys go, they don't seem to miss Christian McCaffrey. And I'm like, you don't understand what Christian McCaffrey does, like not only in the run game, but what he does in the passing game and what he does for the other guys that play on your football team, the pressure he takes off of other guys. So let's not get it twisted. Christian McCaffrey is missed, even though that kid is playing exceptionally well in the backfield.
Mark Schlereth is with us. Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase Hellman's at your local Walmart, Kroger, or grocery store to add extra deliciousness and creamy flavor to your game day dishes this football season. Hey, Mark, I wanted to ask you this. Did you by chance see the video at Niner practice last Friday of Brandon Ayuk wearing the wrong colored shorts?
Yes.
Okay. Would love your professional opinion, especially with the way it looked, having to be talked out of the shorts and having him swing his leg at the shorts. Big deal to a team or not?
No, it's probably not a big deal. I think we always tend to make more out of it. If Brandon Ayuk was balling out of control, nobody would even talk about the color shorts he's wearing, right? But he got the big contract. He sat out, he held out or he held in, he did all that stuff. And then he hasn't really performed. I mean, Juwan Jennings has been a bigger, you know, a big time performer, a bigger time performer than he has. So, and you know, he's had that ample opportunity because of different injuries, because of Christian being out, because of Debo being out, because of Kittle missing time. So, you know, you had this golden opportunity to really produce, and you really haven't. So then it becomes a big deal, you know, it becomes a focus deal and all those kind of things. So winning is always the great elixir, and playing great is always, you know, the great elixir for things like that. But in the overall scheme of things, do I think it's a big deal? No. Do I think it gets more attention because, you know, he's had these opportunities to really kind of step that game up and really become that forefront of that offense and hasn't done it? Yeah, then it becomes a deal. But, you know, in the overall scheme of things, do I think it's a big deal? No, probably not.
Not only four games in, and the sample is still relatively small this year, but you look at Ayuk and he's yet to go over 50 yards in a game and no touchdowns. Where do you think the disconnect lies between he and Purdy and this Niner passing game?
Well, you miss all that time, you know, and you miss some of the reps and you miss the connection, and you know your quarterback feels more comfortable with other guys, and they had a big time connection last year. They made a lot of plays, but you know, what did I tell you guys and everybody else? Like, he has been the third or fourth option on that team that is full of offensive, you know, weapons and big time personnel. And so now all of a sudden you become more of a focal point when you have guys injured, and you know, and maybe you are exactly what I thought you were, you know, a nice number two. So, anyhow, but that's, you know, that's just always the way I've felt about that. And, you know, I haven't sugarcoated it in any stretch of the imagination. And so, you know, maybe all of a sudden you get coverage rolled to you, or you get the better corner on you, you know, you get the top corner on you and a majority of the time. And you're not quite ready for prime time. So, you know, that's kind of how I look at it. And you're right, it is a small sample size, but until you prove otherwise, that's kind of the narrative that you know, that holds true.
Well, Stink, here's where I'd really love to draw on your expertise, because you know the Shanahans, you know Kyle so well. Let's not just talk about shorts and the fact that 48 yards is his best game so far this year. Let's talk about the fact that he was in the doghouse 3 years ago for a while. Let's talk about the entire offseason, the hold-in, where Kyle was reportedly really frustrated. Based on the person you know in Kyle Shanahan, what is his willingness to deal with stuff like that? What do you think he's thinking about all of this?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think I know that like you said, he was in the doghouse early, and I think there was a learning curve for Ayuk, you know, about learning how to play the style of football that Kyle Shanahan demands you play. And if you don't play, you're not going to get opportunities, and they're not going to create plays for you. And, you know, that's just the way the Shanahans are. Like, I've always said there's two types of like with a head coach, you have to have these two types of fear that exist. It's the kind of the biblical principle of fear, which is like the fear of the Lord, which means an awesome reverence or respect. You've got to have respect and reverence for the coach and the guy calling plays, right? I mean, you've got to have some of that. And then there's just flat out fear. Like, man, if I don't do my job, this guy will cut my ass. That's, you know, you've got to have some of that. And Kyle has those things, but There will be consequences if you don't play the way you're asked to play. If you're asked to do things that you refuse to do, or that you don't do well, or that like if you're asked to run a secondary route, you know, we always call those routes where maybe you're third in the progression or fourth in the progression and you're probably not getting the ball. You know, the quarterbacks and people will call those the love of the game routes. Meaning, man, I just got to go out here and run my ass off, and I've got to draw coverage, even though I know I'm not getting the ball on this particular route. And if you don't do it that way, then all of a sudden coverage sloughs off you. They can tell you're not getting the ball, and so they can go help elsewhere, right? And they create an opportunity, you know, or they take away opportunities for other people. And so, you know, if you're not playing the way you're asked to play, if you're not blocking the way you're asked to block, if you're not doing the things, the little things that maybe don't get noticed on film, if you're not, you know, to the average fan, if you're not doing those things, then he's not going to design plays for you. Like, until you do the dirty work, man, you're not getting an opportunity to shine. And, you know, I know this about Kyle. I know how he operates just like his father did. you know, he'll say, hey, man, we're going to run this play and we're going to run it five times. And I don't really even like this play, but we're running it five times because I'm going to get four explosive in the passing game off of this. And I'm going to design one for you. I'm going to design one like, hey, I'll design one for you, Kittle. I'll design one for you, Ayuk. I'll design one for you, Debo, and I'll design one. You know, well, guess what? If you're not doing the dirty work, I'm not designing one for you. I'm designing one for, instead of Ayuk getting one, I'm going to get one to, Juszczyk. I'm going to get one to somebody else who is doing the dirty work. So, and that's, you know, there's a reward system there. And I don't have, like, that's the way it should be. Like, if you're not sacrificing for the guys that you play with, if you're not doing your job to the best of your ability, or if you're, you know, slacking on that stuff, then you should, you know, you should be punished for that. That's not how you win as a football team. That's not how championships are built.
And is that where the Shanahan offense really is at its best, when it's a meritocracy of five eligibles and everyone's getting their chance and everybody's moving around and all of the different options are available on every play?
Well, where it's the best is when you're really running the ball exceptionally well, and everybody's involved in that. Every guy is sold out for that run, because then, like, Kyle is so good at creating and marrying the play action pass game to that run game. And so if you're really selling out and you're really running the ball well, then everything you do that mirrors or marries to that run game gets guys wide open. I mean, how many times do you see guys that are running through a deep over or a low cross or something where there's not somebody within 8 yards of that particular dude? Like, he is just running free, and it looks like the easiest throw in the world. And that's all off of design. You know, it's all off of, you suck guys up in the passing game, you suck them up in the play action game, and they can't get out. They can't help themselves because you run it down their throat. And then when you go stalk a guy, and you go stalk a guy like you're going to block a safety, and all of a sudden you hit a double move on him, you're 14 yards beyond him. And, you know, and now what? Now that guy's turning and sprinting, but he has no chance of getting there. So those easy throws, those easy completions that are big-time explosives, like, that is what he does best. And then when you start putting explosives together, when you talk to defensive coordinators, every time you hit an explosive play on offense, that's a 10-plus yard run and a 20-plus yard pass, every one of those basically in a drive chart equates to about 3 points. So, you know, you hit 12 explosives in a game, man, you're gonna hang 35, 40 points on somebody.
Mark Schlereth with us here on Willard and Dibbs, 95.7 The Game. Hey, Stink, where do you think Davante Adams is going to end up?
I think he's going to end up with the Jets. Ultimately, I think he's going to go back with Aaron Rodgers, and you know, that Aaron is going to force that to happen. I'm sure that Aaron, called both Robert Saleh, the head coach, and Joe Douglas, the GM, into his office, you know, and gave him a good stern talk. You know, he runs the organization, so... Yeah, I'm pretty sure that feels like the place he's going to end up.
Does that make sense to you? I get those connections, but is that what the Jets need?
Well, listen, man. Obviously, when you watch the Jets on offense, Aaron has not truly connected with Garrett Wilson. There's a disconnect there. And I went back to that game Sunday against Denver and really looked at it, and there was a bunch of half-assed plays. I thought Garrett Wilson, you know, like we talked about those love of the game routes, I thought there was a lot of half-assed routes run. And, you know, and I just know older quarterbacks, you know, guys that have been around a long time, had a lot of success, dude, they will freeze your ass out. They just don't even think about it. Like, all right, if that's the route you're going to run for me, then you're never going to see another football. And so there's been a little bit of a disconnect there for whatever reason. But, yeah, I could definitely see that really helping the Jets. And then the other thing is, and this is big, you go back to his time, Davante Adams' time with Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay, and you go back to third downs, and he had 19 touchdowns on third downs, which was, in that time frame, was number one in the National Football League. He had the second most targets, the second most catches for first downs. like the second most yards on third down. Like he was the go-to guy. And when you have that guy, especially if you're running like an individual route, like X individual or whatever on the, you know, on the weak side in the boundary, like even when he's double covered, he's open. And you get to the point now where, you know, they struggled in protection last week. Well, guess what? If you've got a situation in which you can just shove the ball to him and you know that guy is going to get open, or that guy is going to, you know, strong hand it and body somebody up and catch that ball. Well, now all of a sudden I'm getting the ball in under a second and a half because I know that dude's going to convert. I know that dude's going to find a way. And now it solves some of your protection issues on third down because the ball's just out so quick. So, and that really is, when I look at the Jets, that really is their kind of their biggest issue is if he's got to hold the ball and guys aren't getting open quick, then that protection will break down.
Yeah, and a 10-9 loss against Denver reeks a little bit of offensive desperation only four games in. When you look at Arizona, Stink, what do you think about their offense outside of Kyler Murray and the ability to make plays and James Conner in a good ground game?
Yeah, I think well, James Conner's just a football player, man. That guy's one of my favorite players. He is so good at what he does. Like we talked about with Mason, put your foot in the ground and just get downhill and get positive yardage. I think, you know, still from a talent standpoint, I think there are some talent issues up front a little bit. I think there's some talent issues. And so that hampers them a little bit. I don't think they have elite level speed at the wide receiver position, so they don't have anybody that threatens you over the top. Even though Marvin Harrison Jr. is a legit big-time receiver, you know, he's a tall dude, but he doesn't have that blazing type open-it-up speed, and they don't have really anybody on their roster that has that. So, you know, you can keep a shell over the top of them pretty much. And then Kyler has put together four straight weeks where he's had an opening, opening drive touchdown. And, like, when he's rolling, he's good, but I'm telling you, when a mistake happens at some point in the game, look at his first half splits or his first quarter splits to the rest of the game splits, and they are eye-popping how things fall apart in that offense. And Kyler is just one of those dudes that when he makes a mistake, or you can see his dauber down, his body language is bad. You can see him frustration, or just open frustration. Like there's some things going on there that he needs to rectify and clean up because it has been one of those first quarter awesome and the rest of the game just very, very average.
You just led into something I wanted to ask you. We were batting this around before the show. Simple question. Is Kyler Murray good?
Kyler Murray's talented.
Is he good?
Kyler Murray is explosive. Kyler Murray is all those things. Is he good? Right now, no.
Yeah, like is he someone you'd sign?
No. Nope. I think he's way too inconsistent. He is, like, here's my issue with a quarterback like that, like versus Brock Purdy. Like, I have this rule I talk about all the time. I made it up, but in my mind, it's how offense needs to be run. I call it the 70-30 rule. And the 70-30 rule is 70% of the time I need my quarterback and I need my offense to be on schedule. Right? I've got to be on schedule. Hey, 30% of the time when things break down, as they often do, then off schedule I need a quarterback to make a play. Okay? When you live in that world, in that realm, you'll survive that off schedule stuff, and every now and again you'll make a big play, but you probably won't hurt yourself if you're in that kind of 70%, we're on schedule. We're in, you know, we're in second down and 6-, we're in third down and 2-. Like, when I'm living in that world, like, I can operate my offense. The problem with guys that want to play off schedule all the time is they pass up easy, you know, they pass up profits to try to make bigger gains. And ultimately what happens is you pass up those profits, so you're not in great situations. You know, you're not always third down and shorts. You're in a lot more third down and longs because you passed up the 5 or 6 yard gain to keep yourself on schedule. And then ultimately you get behind the chains and you get behind the game, and then you take chances that you shouldn't take. you throw one up in a team meeting, it gets picked off, and the next thing you know, you're on the wrong side of a 12-point deficit. And that happens far too often with Kyler. He just plays off schedule too much, in my opinion.
Stink, great stuff as always. We love having you, and we thank you.
My pleasure, guys. Have a great one.
Okay, thanks, Mark. You too. There he goes. Mark Schlereth. That was Odyssey NFL Insider Mark Schlereth, host of the Stinkin' Truth podcast.
This season of the WNBA has gone to new heights.
And that means the playoffs are going to be hotter than ever.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson.
And all WNBA season long, we've brought you analysis and interviews with some of your favorite court queens.
So for the finals, you know we're bringing takes you can only find in this courtroom.
Listen to and follow Queens of the Court, a WNBA podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs.
I mean, Mark, it's so good to hear y'all's voices. And Mr. Dibs, I mean, it's just been way too damn long. So it puts a smile on my face.
On 95.7 The Game.
I mean, that's what we're going for. There's nothing better than putting a smile on somebody else's face.
Pretty cool, huh?
Or your own.
Yeah.
Smile.
Yeah.
See, you just did.
No, and I've been in a good mood for a long time now, for the most part.
How long?
It's been months, you know?
It's been in a good mood for months?
Not every second of every day, but...
Okay, I was going to say.
For me, the way I measure it is 2 to 6, because that's all that really matters is, you know, what do you bring to the show? The rest of the day, whatever, misery, I'm at home huffing gas, you know, watching reruns.
The rest of the day is misery?
It's just misery.
Yeah, well,
you know.
Yeah, I've been in a good mood for probably... About 22 minutes.
Good.
Yeah.
All right.
About 22 minutes.
Mark Schlereth will do that.
Yeah.
Stink.
Tell you what. Got the stink off is what he did.
It's good performance as always.
You know what I mean?
And I liked what he said about, like, when you're the third option on a route, are you still trying to sell it? And I haven't looked at the all 22, but I don't think that Brandon Ayuk has been, like, faking it or going 70% on routes where he's clearly not going to be the primary.
Right. I mean, the plays on which he was potentially a decoy went well for the 49ers.
Yeah.
So that's good. But it was interesting what he was talking about with regard to Shanahan and a reward system. In other words, these plays, it is fascinating, I think, sort of tweak to the conversation we've now had with two of our guests in the last couple of weeks. TJ Houshmandzadeh, admittedly Brandon Ayuk's personal coach, is like, you're going to pay this guy $30 million, plus he's a receiver. But you're going to pay him $30 million, you got to drop your plays for him. You got to make that guy your guy. And Stink is like, I don't care what you get paid. You get plays drawn up for you when you've done the dirty work. And I would argue Brandon has a reputation for doing the dirty work. I just don't know where we're at on that this year. Does missing camp and wearing red shorts, like, I don't know. Does that all count as doing the dirty work? I don't know where that sits in the mind of Kyle Shanahan. But, yeah, maybe there are fewer plays being drawn up for him than we thought there would be or that there will be in the future.
Yeah. And so far, I mean, the targets would tell you that he doesn't seem to be the primary on a lot of throws, although the first throw of the game last Sunday was to Brandon Ayuk, and it was well-designed, and I was telling this to Greg Cosell. We talked about it out of 21 personnel where Ayuk ran a deep crossing route, and he caught it, and he got 36 yards, and it was like, okay, Brandon, here we go. Time to cook. 100-yard game. 8 catches, couple of tuds, let's get this done. And then he had one more catch the rest of the way.
The rest of the way.
And he had 4 more targets, and a couple of them were, you know, just well-covered overthrows. One was a pass breakup. One was another catch that he had for 11 yards or so. I don't think that he's not getting targets because of any punitive action from the coach.
No, I don't either. But there's something organic about it. Like, it's also not happening.
Correct. Now, 4 weeks is no longer... I mean, it's not a big sample, but it's not a small sample.
Not the tiniest.
Agreed. We're now almost a fourth of the way through the year, and he's yet to get 50 yards in a game, and he is yet to get, you know, 6 catches in a game, and he's yet to find the end zone. Those are real things.
No doubt. We also want to pass along that that Fred Warner and George Kittle both, again, did not practice today. And Kyle Shanahan has said, not fun, you know, that they have not been able to get there yet, though he did add those two players could, in theory, play even without practicing. Normally, if you don't get there by Friday, you're very unlikely to get there. But Kyle's going to leave the door open there, which almost sort of suggests to me that he's not feeling terribly optimistic about them practicing tomorrow either. And I do think, you know, that I don't think it changes what you would expect the outcome to be, but Fred Warner, much more so than George. I think the Niners can move the ball against Arizona just fine, even without George Kittle out there. But the Fred Warner one, especially with a quick quarterback, to me is a very, very big deal.
Right. And we talked to Greg Cosell on Wednesday about, you know, how often you spy Kyler Murray. And he said you would do it situationally. And I also asked him about who you would spy with, because Fred Warner would be the most logical one to spy Kyler Murray because he's just about as fast as Kyler Murray and he's great going sideline to sideline. But do you want to waste your number one cover linebacker in a spy situation? So if Fred Warner's not able to go, well, that leaves you open in two different fronts, because I know D. Winters is still coming back from his ankle. Mm-hmm. And the other linebackers you have, Demetrius Flanagan Fowles and, you know,
Devondre.
Thank you, yep. Devondre, who's equally not great in the pass game. Now you're in a spot where, what do you do? I mean, do you go to a lot more nickel coverage and you spy him with one of your corners, or do you bring a safety down? Without Fred Warner, your defense has to be a little bit more gimmicky, I think, against Kyler Murray.
Well, the Fred Warner one, I'll just say this real quick. The Fred Warner one is one of those that I think sort of defies your eyes. And I think that we're used to looking at players when they come back out on the sideline. There's no blue tent. There's no coach tending to them. They're not even sitting down. They keep their uniform on, and they stand there on the sideline. When you have a double-digit lead, you think to yourself, oh, he's fine. And then you talk to him after the game, and he smiles, and he sort of just spills relaxation all over the whole situation, and you're like, he's going to play. I more listened to what he said as opposed to how he looked when he said it. He's like, dude, it takes a lot to keep me out of a football game. A lot for me to tap out. And I did. So, like, they couldn't put him out there on the field. And then he didn't practice on a Wednesday. And then he didn't practice on a Thursday. Like, I feel like we probably have not dedicated the vibe to this that it deserves. Ladies and gentlemen, Fred Warner is hurt. He is hurt. It is not okay. Like, I'm not saying it's a long-term thing or anything like this, but I really feel like we've flicked off the idea all week long that he might miss a game.
Yeah.
Fred Warner might miss the game.
He's played 102 games in his career, and he's missed a total of 0 games in his career. He's 102 for 102. Every time that there's been a game and he's been a 49er, he's had his uniform on, his pads, his helmet, and he has played football, including his rookie year, where he played a lot, and he played some special teams. And then since then, he's been an unbelievable game-wrecking force now in his 7th year of football. So if Fred Warner doesn't play, that's a huge thing, not necessarily for can they win or, you know, can they lose, will they lose, whatnot. But Fred Warner's never missed a game. That is pretty damn special, playing that position and the way he goes about playing.
Yeah. I really... That's one for me to really kind of keep an eye on.
Yeah,
obviously. I mean, my gosh, we got people out here, and Patrick Willis was one of them. Did you see? He said, like, this is DPOY, best linebacker. He's like, stop. This is the best football player in the NFL. Period. Acho said it. Patrick Willis said it. You know, is that coming from a biased place because he's a Niner? I don't know, but if you want to talk about the way any one individual in the sport has affected football games this year, it's pretty hard to look away from Fred Warner. It's pretty difficult.
Yeah. We talked about it as far as PFF grades go, and I know it's just a measurement, and I always have to say that because some people are down on Pro Football Focus, but after week 3, he was number 2 in all of football in their grading, and he was behind only the center for the New Orleans Saints. So it tells you the kind of impact he's had. And I'm looking right now at the New Orleans center to see if Fred's been able to pass him. Eric McCoy, 95.5, and Fred's right about the same level.
Yep.
Out
yep.
of 100.
Ugh,
I mean, Fred's been...
It's a big number.
Spectacular, even though he missed a half a game. And I think that if it was Super Bowl or a game like that, Fred might have been able to gut it out, but we'll see if he's able to go. And the other thing to keep in mind, I think, with Fred Warner and George Kittle is they play a week from today as well.
That's a great point.
So you play in 3 days, and then you play in 7 days. So if you want to fire Fred's bullet and have him play Sunday, if he's 75%, let's just say, and then he plays, and now he's 60%, for the game at Seattle on Thursday, that's not good. Or do you think maybe if we wait another 4 days, he can be 85% or 90% for Thursday, and then you fire him against Seattle?
Well, in theory, I mean, the Niners are 0-2 on the road so far this year. Seattle can move the damn ball. It's a primetime game. The 12th man, that thing's going to be all turned up. They're the team that's in front of you in the division. You make a very, very fair point. Normally, I think players, when they're ready, they play, period. I don't think they do that whole, like, well, we could beat them without late. Like,
totally.
That's for us to do, not them. But this might be one of those situations where you do kind of go, look, do we want to hit the gas right now and risk this for 4 days from now? Like, that's a massive 4 days. Two division games, which I count as a game and a half. So call it three games in the standings, I would argue, in 4 days. That's bananas.
Yeah,
this whole thing is going to take some sort of shape. You know, maybe not if they win one and lose one. I don't know. If you're 3-3 coming out of this, you're not feeling great. If you're 2-4, you're feeling awful. If you're 4-2, you're peacocking.
Right.
So this is a really, really big swing of 4 days, which I think kind of brings us to the question that you were throwing out there. And I want to let you speak to it. Like, why would you even ask that? Because on one level, it feels laughable to ask. And if they're just joining us, the question was a simple one, because I asked the guys, hey, when I think of Kyler Murray, what do you think of? Is he good? And you fired back. You're like, I want to ask that about the Niners. Are they good?
Right.
Why would you even ask that?
Because this is the situation. You've got two divisional games coming up. And for me, being good means you're really good and you're a team that could be the number one overall seed. And I look at this team right now. Are they good? Yeah, they're good. And if you want to talk about the metrics and the math and all the rest of it, we can do that. They've scored offensively on 51% of all possessions, which is fourth in football. You can run it. You can pass it. Your quarterback is one of the five best QBs in football. Don't at me. He might be higher on the list than that. I don't even want to get into that discussion.
Yeah, it's too easy.
He's good. He's a star. They've got talent. Your backup running back is dominating football. Your coach is amazing and all the rest of it. And your defense, I think, is better than what they've showed. And maybe they're not as good as they were against New England, because New England's offense is poor. But for me, if you are a good team, then you go out and you beat Arizona at home, and then you go to Seattle and you win a game in a short week. It's a double short week, by the way. Seattle, they play this weekend, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, they do.
So it's not like they're going to be any more rested. You do have to travel, and you do have to face the 12th man. But for me, if you're a good team, you win both these games, you take control of the division, as you should, at 4-2 with the tiebreakers, and then you head on down the road to a tough stretch. So my answer is yes, you're a good team.
Well, obviously.
You do have some faults, though.
Obviously.
Your special teams, your punt team.
They're the worst in the league.
It's beyond the worst in the league.
The metrics, I wonder if everyone knows that. This is metrically now. The special teams as a whole are last in the entire NFL.
Right. Let's just talk about the punter. And I'm looking at Mitch Wishnowsky, and I'm not seeing the big booming kicks that we're used to seeing.
Agreed.
And I actually charted it against New Orleans.
You charted the punts?
Or against New England. I was trying to just chart the kick and then the return. And in the second half, he had a 48-yard kick. They had a 14-yard return, a net of 34. That's terrible.
Can I interrupt for 1 second?
Interrupt.
I don't want to ever hear again about how, oh, this baby, she's two, and my life has got a lot going on.
I'm a busy man.
You're charting punts. You're fine.
Well?
You're charting punts.
if you want to just real quick.
I think you have oodles of time.
The way it works is on Sunday, I watch the game. And when I'm watching the game, it's wifey comes home from the grocery store and I pause it, run out, have produce in the produce drawer, the milk and this and that. And then you play it and you're catching up. And then, you know, my have it. So the game is on and I'm watching the game. But I'm not really watching the game. And then Monday morning, 9 o'clock, off you go. You know, my might go growing tree. Yeah, you're damn right you're going to the growing tree. And then I go home, and I get the pen out and the clipboard, and I chart the game.
And you chart the punts.
Second, I chart
yeah.
it all.
Yeah.
I'm pausing, I'm rewinding, and I'm going through it. And one thing I really wanted to focus on this time in the rewatch is the punts and the net, because I looked at the numbers, and they are far and away the worst punting team in football.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm still more focused on the fact that you don't have enough juice to look at your family and be like, this is work. I'm busy right now.
Okay.
1 o'clock on Sunday. I'm busy.
Yes. I lock in on the game, but there's also the whole idea of a two-year-old. And when she, you know, when she wants daddy, I'm going to give her my time.
Wait.
Yeah. I can't do it.
You have to.
Well,
you have to.
I can.
And she needs to learn that.
She will. The beauty is I do afternoon drive now. So on Monday, after she's off to preschool, I can then reimmerse myself into the notes. And I'm looking here. End of the first half. They punt. 42-yard kick and an 11-yard return. A net of 31. What I'm seeing, Mark, is two things. One, your guy, your Aussie kicker, he might be New Zealand, I can't remember, Wisnowski, he's not kicking the ball as far as he used to.
No, the whole special teams looks awful.
But he is hitting these low-line drives, and the coverage team is not covering punts.
Although I don't come too far down the road of Jake Moody. I know he missed the kick that we all really, really, really wanted him to make, but I don't think Jake Moody's having a bad year. By any stretch, he's missed one kick from 55 yards. But outside of that, you're not wrong. The special teams has been absolutely awful. I'd just say this, though. I wonder how long do we need to do this? Where it's kind of like, look, of course the 49ers are good. Of course. We don't need to label them after every time they play, is I guess what I'm kind of getting at. This lesson has been taught to us over and over and over again, which is that things can look completely awful in certain points, and then they turn. No football team looks the same throughout the entire year, unless you want to go back to Brady's Patriots, and they didn't even win the Super Bowl that year either. Like, there are going to be stupid losses every single year, all the time. They even had them last year. They did this last year. They did this last year, right? You're 5-0. And then you're like, ooh, peacocking into Minnesota on a Monday night, you know? Or actually, that was after the Cleveland thing. Cleveland first, then Minnesota, then Cincinnati. You looked ridiculous. You looked ridiculous. Then you're good again. Then you showed up, and we all opened presents and ate too much food and sat down to watch you look like a joke. And then you went to the Super Bowl. So, like, all I'm saying to you, there's nothing with what you're breaking down or sharing is wrong. There's plenty of should. I sort of feel like the 49ers kind of should win every time they suit up. Is that biased or homerish? Maybe it's got a tinge of it, except for Vegas agrees with me. They're favored every single time they take the field. All the time, every time.
As of now.
As of now.
Yep.
I don't even know if we sit here right now at 2-2. Is there a game in which they would not be favored right now?
Kansas City, look October ahead. 20th.
What's the look ahead line there?
I believe it's one. I think they're favored by one.
And they're still favored.
And I don't know if the look. I'll check to see if the look ahead lines have changed.
I'll try to pull it
You're
up.
Coming up on a stretch where you're going to have a negative rest advantage, which is to say you're going to have a rest disadvantage. And for example, the Chiefs game. You're going to have a 10-day break between Seattle and Kansas City. Well, Kansas City's coming off their bye. So Kansas City actually goes into that game with a rest advantage over you, even though you're playing on Thursday night. Then you play the Cowboys, coming off their bye. This stretch coming up, after Arizona on Sunday, you play Seattle, the Chiefs, and the Cowboys. Three games. You have four games in 21 days. one road and two with a rest disadvantage, this is a tough stretch for you as a 49er team.
Sure. I don't know. They're all tough. I get what you're saying. Yes, the teams will get better.
And the Cowboy game looks a little bit easier based on the fact that they lost two of their best defensive players, and they don't run the ball.
I don't even think that's a very good football team.
Well, I think if they have Lawrence and if they, you know, if they have both of their, you know, defensive forces.
Give me the moment this year where you were like, ooh, Cowboys. Like, literally, give me the one drive.
No, they've...
Give me the game.
They've been underwhelming. They've underachieved.
Like,
no
I mean,
doubt.
They've played two games at home. They got blown off of the field both times.
How about this, Cowboys?
Literally blown off the field. Don't give me the stupid fake points against Baltimore in the fourth quarter. Ooh, they're coming back. No, they're not. No, they're not. They're not coming back. Did the same thing against Green Bay in the playoffs. Ooh, they're making a run. No, the other team's letting you. They're in a prevent defense. You're wasting the clock. You lost. Blown off the field. You beat Cleveland. They're terrible. You had to battle like hell to hold off the Giants. They're terrible.
They're 2-2.
They
go to Pittsburgh on Sunday night.
They're going
to
lose.
And then they host Detroit after that.
They're going to lose
Detroit
again.
Detroit off a bye.
They're going to be 2-4.
Okay.
They're not a very good football team. They're totally, they are one-dimensional. Dak has a good arm, like he's a good quarterback, not a great one. And they have a good receiver. They have a good tight end. Their second receiver just got hurt.
They can't run the ball.
They can't run the ball. They don't try to run the ball. Their defense is factually not special. So,
and it's compromised right now.
Like, I don't, well, yes, and it wasn't good when it wasn't compromised.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give you the same Cowboys take that I gave. This is way less sparkly, but this is the same thing I told you about the Eagles last year when they were 10-1. That team is a big bunch of fake. That is not a good football team. They're not scary. They're not winning that division. At this point, I would be surprised if the Cowboys went to the playoffs. And if they go to the playoffs, it's only because there's really not a whole lot special in the entire division.
That being said, they will come here off a bye, and so they will have a rest advantage, which is a big thing in the NFL. And you have the same thing against Kansas City, a team that you can't seem to beat ever in the regular or in the post. Either season, you can't beat Kansas City, and they're going to have a rest advantage over you, too.
No, all fair, but circling back to how we got on this conversation, not only are the 49ers really good, they remain favored in, I think, Chex notes, all of their remaining games.
Did you look at the look-ahead against Kansas City?
I can't find it.
I'll look
for it.
I have it.
Yeah, like, I mean, even at 4-0, with Rashee Rice hitting IR and the way the Chiefs look right now, the Niners, I would bet, are going to be favored in that game. And you told me the last time you looked, they were.
It's by one. Yeah.
So anyway, like, I get what you're saying, but in no way, shape, or form am I looking at this weekend or even the next week where they will play twice and saying that anything is solidified about who they are in these next 7 days. Like, the 49ers, they could look completely different in December, and we've watched them scuffle out of the gate. Grandy and Kyle Madsen were talking about this on the football show on Monday. Kyle Shanahan's record in September and October versus what happens in November is completely different. The 49ers, I believe, are going to be amazing in November and December, if blessed with the correct health.
Yeah, part of that is skewed by his first 2 years when they were dreadful. They were 0-10.
Right, and then Garoppolo showed up and they went 6-0.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's part of the conversation.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
But if they're 4-4 going into the bye, well, we're going to have a different conversation.
We're presented by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises. Do believe that GP2 is going to be on somewhat soon. He's coming on in the 4 o'clock hour, and I keep seeing 808 numbers call Lucas. Pretty sure that's Hawaii. Pretty sure. So GP2, am I right? Isn't 808?
You got to Google it.
Isn't it? I think that's Hawaii. Isn't that the 808 area code? Everybody's looking at me with a blank stare.
Yeah, Hawaii.
Anyway, yeah.
Yep.
There you go. All right.
Look at you.
So GP2, not far around the corner in the 4 o'clock hour, and we'll continue to break down the Niners 888-957-9570. Willard and Dibs.
This season of the WNBA has gone to new heights.
And that means the playoffs are going to be hotter than ever.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson.
And all WNBA season long, we've brought you analysis and interviews with some of your favorite court queens.
So for the finals, you know we're bringing takes you can only find in this courtroom.
Listen to and follow Queens of the Court, a WNBA podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.